Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. On today's program, we will explore the concepts behind prevention, intervention, and treatment, as well as recovery options and innovations. Our program is a forum of factual research, personal experiences, and knowledgeable opinions. Now, here is your host, Dr. Joe Terhar.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's just a joy to be back with you all. It's a joy to have you with me. Welcome to the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. I've been fortunate and blessed to work in addiction prevention, intervention, and treatment since 1978, having many experiences and learning from many people along the way. I'm here to share with you what I have, learn from you and your experience, and we together share in overcoming addiction with the hope of prevention, intervention, and treatment. Thank you, of course, to our prime sponsor, Las Vegas Recovery Center. I told you about a gal last week that has suffered for years and years with chronic pain, her alcohol and marijuana use. But what really, really has been dragging her down is the opioid use in efforts to relieve the pain. And then benzodiazepines to calm her anxiety, which, unfortunately, only stimulates more anxiety. So the dosages have to be increased. That's why Las Vegas recovery is so important, folks, because your loved one or yourself, you can go there and be treated with respect and compassion, comfortably supported in coming off of the drugs that, for anxiety and pain, have only been making the matter worse. And then support for changing your life so that not only can you better cope with the continuing challenges, but those 10 non-opioid pain management strategies that assist you or your loved one in living with the pain. Now, in many cases, we find that when the person is brought off of the pain medication, there is no more pain. How can that be? Well, remember, in previous shows, I explained the mechanism. The pain is transferred from one neuron to the next. That's it's neurochemical. That's how all of our messages in our body work, in our brain, in our nervous system. And what we now know is that the short-acting pain medication, the opioids, create an inflammation in the glial cells that wrap around and support the pain transmission cells. These glial cells become inflamed, and they are, at least for many people, the origin and the source of chronic neuropathic pain. And remember, we spoke last week about this does not happen equally to everybody. Chronic pain is, for many people, a neuropathic, a pathology of the neuron. But pain itself varies from individual to individual. Just as we do not all look alike nor act alike, our nervous systems come from our genetic material. And we know that people respond differently to exactly the same pain. If we mechanically instill a little bit of pain in a person, the individuals who experience that exact same pain will subjectively respond differently, because our bodies are different and our psyches, our emotional composition is different. And part of the influence in that difference in our pain perception is genetic. So, genetics is the topic today. This is, as you know, our second edition of genetics, because it's just so important that we help increase the understanding of the role of genetics. How do genetics affect drug use and addiction? Now, one more note back on opioids for a moment, and the reason why Las Vegas recovery is so important is because the most fatal, the most risky drug of abuse is opioids. Oh, I know a lot of you think it's methamphetamine. By golly, powerful, powerful drug, kills lots of people. No, not so much. It results in many people going to prison. But what kills more people is opioids. Well, painkillers, but those are prescribed, by golly, by doctors and ARNPs and whatnot, and physician's assistants. How can that be so fatal? Well, the risk is that when taking a pain medication abusively, where you're not following the prescription, when you're taking it for the psychological effects, what happens is many people will try to get off of the medication, try to get off of the OxyContin, the hydros, the heroin. And with some reasonable success, they will. And then if they haven't been involved in a support network, if they haven't created for themselves a support network, if they have not been involved in drug recovery with support, there's the risk of relapse. And relapse for opioid dependence is extremely fatal, because when a person discontinues the opioid use, they have an extremely high tolerance. They've built up that tolerance. The body's adapted. The brain has adapted. When the person discontinues for a while, the brain and the liver, they start to work toward getting back to normal. So the person's tolerance for the very dangerous opioid drug decreases. With the tolerance decreasing, then if the person relapses, he or she is extremely vulnerable to fatality, to death, because the tolerance for that particular drug has gone down. Just a last word of why Las Vegas recovery is so important. And tell them that I referred you. Tell them that you heard it on the radio show, that's how you found out about this incredible resource, a national resource. So back to genetics. Why are genetics so important, and how does it relate to drug use? Again, let's run through a basic primer of the role of genetics in our lives. My hair color was genetic. My older brother Mike down there in Phoenix, he's got very similar hair color to me. It's genetics. My balding head, well, my son has a balding head. His has started much sooner than mine. My father had inguinal hernias. I had inguinal hernias. My son had inguinal hernias. These are genetic. My father had crossed eyes. I had crossed eyes. My son has crossed eyes. It's genetic. Now, it's not complete. My father doesn't look like me. My son does not look exactly as I do. It's a combination, as you know, of my genes. My genes are a combination of my mother's genes and my father's genes, and with some mutations. There are always mutations. This is why identical twins are not identical. Genes shape our bodies externally, which are the ones we've been talking about mostly, but also internally. How my brain responds to various drugs is influenced by my brain chemistry, and that was initially established by my genes. Well, farther down in my body, my liver, for example. my liver metabolizes drugs. If I take a pain medication, if I take a cold medication, my brain responds, but my liver also responds and metabolizes those, breaks them down. The primary metabolic mechanism in the liver is called the CYP450, cytochrome P450. Now, one family of enzymes that are created from the CYP450 system is the CYP2D6. Now, family members out there, you don't have to remember that, but drug counselors, you should write this down. Chemical dependency counselors, you should write this down. This is a family of enzymes. Why is that significant for addiction? Because this particular enzyme family, the CYP2D6, metabolizes, it breaks down about 25% of all drugs, including drugs of abuse and psychiatric medications. But that's only 1% of the entire CYP450 enzyme system. Getting a little technical here, what I'm simply saying is that our CYP450 system is the primary enzymatic or breaking down system in the body for all drugs. And one part of that branch is the CYP2D6. That breaks down 25% of all drugs in the body. There are about 100 known drugs, psychotropic or affecting our brain, drugs that are broken down by the CYP2D6 variant enzyme system. So when a person goes to a psychiatrist, gets antidepressant medications, that system determines at what rate that individual's body is going to break down that drug. Now, 8 to 10% of the entire population has a deficiency in the CYP2D6 enzymatic system. So that person's body will break down Tagamet and Prozac much differently, much differently. This is why, though it is rare, some people will have an instant overdose to cocaine, because they have a different metabolic system. Again, as I said in my last show last week, you line up 100 people, you give them exactly the same amount of exactly the same drug, they're all going to respond somewhat similarly, but quite different. Part of the reason is how their individual brain chemistry responds, but also how their liver responds. So we're going to talk more about the genetics of addiction. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about a number of the variations. So, welcome to the show this morning. We'll see you on the other side of the break, and we'll take a closer look at the drugs of abuse and addiction relative to genetics. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry, and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15 minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning doctor Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved one's lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I want to, first of all, thank all of our listeners out there. From Dr. Jack, a physician down in Louisiana, it's just great to have you and your colleagues. We had as our guest a month ago, Dr. Stuart Gitlow, who's the president of the American Society of Addiction Medicine. And, of course, they put it on their website. The link to our show. It's great to have a number of physicians tuning in and being a part of our conversation. Oh, sure, they get information from me, but it's just great to have them call in and give us additional information, too. In addition, of course, we've got many families who've called. Chemical dependency counselors. Remember Robin called a couple of weeks ago talking about her practice in chemical dependency addiction recovery and treatment. It was fantastic to have her contribute, to bring a contribution to the show, and to give me an opportunity to share information I have. Well, we also have increasing numbers of chemical dependency educators. The International Consortium of Addiction Studies Educators. These are the people across the United States that educate most of our chemical dependency counselors and prevention experts. Of course, in their classrooms, they have lots of social workers and educators and mental health counselors who drop in too for information. It's fantastic to have our connection with members of NCASE. And of course, they've said they really appreciate the information they're getting here, and they're recommending episodes of the show for listening for their students, because it's information that is that important and that helpful. We're just pleased to have you on board and contributing to the show and contributing to our dialogue. So next, don't forget the DVD. You heard the advertisement for it during the break. Why is this so important? Well, let me tell you a story. It's just, I've got so many of them. Last night I was visiting with a husband and wife, fantastic people. The husband, he's a really neat guy, and he's drinking way too much. Well, speaking of genetics, by golly, his mother's family, most of the people have suffered severely from alcohol addiction. His father's family, same thing. Both of his uncles, serious drinking problems. Does it make, is it of any surprise that he also struggles with his drinking? And of course, there's a genetic pattern. There are strong genetic influences. But what I did was I sat down with him and I just wrote on the board. I drew a picture of his brain. And over 10, 11 minutes, that's all it took, 10, 11 minutes, I talked about what was happening to his dopamine level, how it would spike up with a couple of drinks, but then the next day it would fall through the basement. I talked about his beta endorphin, you know, the natural painkiller in our brain. I went through just a couple of other brain neurotransmitters, just showed him, but I helped him relate it to his life, how he feels. I wasn't telling him. I was sharing pictures with him, and he was relating how those pictures matched his emotions and how he feels. And how he feels is wonderful when he's had a couple of drinks. But then he has a couple more drinks. And then he feels not so good the next day, and probably for the next 3 or 4 weeks, his brain chemistry is struggling to try to recover. He has clearly, by his family history, a genetic pattern of his brain chemistry responding differently. So two important mentions here, folks. Number one, buy the video, the DVD, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit. Go online to www.silvertopvideo and get your copy. Chemical Dependency Counselors. Imagine what it's going to be like when you have this in your computer, in your office, and you're talking to a person struggling with methamphetamine addiction, opioid addiction, alcohol addiction, cannabis addiction. And in 10 to 15 minutes, you and your client in an individual session watch the video. And then you talk about with that person about how the video matches what he or she has experienced and the trap. And that's what it all leads to, folks. The video, the DVD shows you the brain trap. And that motivates people. That motivates people to understand they have got to do what all those stars I mentioned last week have done. Robert Downey Jr., Eric Clapton, Eminem, Ben Affleck, Britney Spears, they've all come to realize they have to be abstinent. Of course, then the challenge is how to be happy. Well, that's why we've got treatment and rehab. So remember the DVD, because it's so incredibly powerful in your work. And then number two on this is genetics. The genetics. I talked briefly last week of Dydenchenko's work. She's done incredible research showing that not all people have the same levels of pain. And what she and her team did was identify the COMT in the body. That's a chemical, an enzyme. And for these people, for a large number of people, the level of COMT then corresponds to different levels of perception of pain. Just another example of how we are all created equal in our constitutional rights in the United States, which is wonderful, but we are not all created equal genetically. Neurobiologically, we are not created equal. And when especially young kids go about experimenting with drugs, their brains and their bodies respond differently. And of course, you all know, you've seen this. You've seen people who smoked cigarettes for years and years, and then they decide to quit. And it's just not so difficult. On the other hand, you have seen 20, 21, 25-year-olds who have tried and tried and tried to quit, and they have not been able to. Well, maybe they just weren't motivated. Well, that's a possibility. But what we know from research clearly is a determining factor is their genetics. Remember last week we talked about the women who have the 15q24 nicotinic acetylcholine receptor gene cluster. They had a much more difficult time quitting smoking, even when they were pregnant. I mean, come on, massive motivation. Lin Xun Chun and a number of genetic patterns that correlated to nicotine dependence and later age of smoking cessation. And what they've identified, what they've learned is this particular pattern of genes, a single nucleotide polymorphism, which for our purposes here on the show is not so important, but it just helps us realize that it's very specific. And Yule's research found 41 genetic patterns that responded better to the nicotine patch. So do you realize the significance of this, folks? We're getting into the era now where, based on a person's genetics, the treatment for physical diseases and for chemical addiction will be different. That's phenomenal. I mean, that's breakthrough. We're entering a new era where we have a better understanding of how genes not only affect physical diseases, but addiction. I spoke last week briefly about how Mulchan's research showing that African Americans, of people of African American descent, had 30% more nicotine absorbed into the body, and it stayed longer. The research from the 2007 Youth Risk Behavior Survey found that 12% of adolescents trying to quit were able to. Phenomenal. And those are, again, of African-American descent. Ming Li research in 2008 found that the people with the NRXN1 gene pattern had a greater difficulty with nicotine dependence. But let's shift to alcohol. I think I told you a little bit about my family brunch. Let's review that real quickly because it highlights the importance of serotonin. Yeah. You know, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Serotonin is very significant in our body, our physical homeostasis. How important is it? Well, between 90 and 95% of all the serotonin in our body is in our gut. Why? Because it is so important in regulating food, digestion, and appetite. So it's no wonder that I have, as you recall, my example of my family at Thanksgiving. I misspoke last week and said Christmas, but at Thanksgiving, we'll probably do it again for Christmas. But I make a sourdough coffee cake that's delicious. My family loves it nice and gooey. My older son, he will scramble some eggs from our hens, fresh hen eggs. Fresh hen eggs. If you ever have the opportunity to buy some fresh hen eggs, do so. You'll know what I'm talking about. My other son will lovingly make a fruit salad and gently fold in usually some raspberry yogurt so the bananas and the apples don't brown. And then I slice a 4-H ham. Delicious. Farm-raised. We have a fantastic brunch. And then we sit around and just visit and enjoy that strong sense of contentment. That contentment is serenity, and that comes from serotonin. Well, we know that people with the SLC6A4 genetic pattern, their serotonin level does not function the same as the rest of us. Their serotonin level will spike up on a couple of drinks, and they will have an enhanced sense of comfort and serenity, a chemically induced sense of serenity, and then it crashes. And we don't know exactly how long, weeks, months, it slowly tries to rebuild. Well, is it any surprise to you that we also find those people with the SLC6A4 pattern have an incredibly high rate of alcoholism? Because they get more serenity immediately, but it's false, it's fake, and then they crash through. And how best to replenish that? We'll go have more drinks. We'll talk more about other genetic patterns for addiction on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry, and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15 minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning Dr. Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. So some people may still be struggling with, genetics and cancer, I got that. But not behavior. Genetics can't affect behavior. This is gobbledygook. All those numbers and letters, it's bogus. You can't make, genes cannot make somebody drink. Well, that's why I'm talking about my example of my family brunch. We sit down, we make this fantastic meal for each other. And now that's four people working together in a small kitchen. It's not without frustration. But we sit down, have this delicious meal. And that deep sense of contentment, of, in scientific language, satiety, being satisfied, that comes from serotonin. And as I said before, it's not coincidental that the aspiration for recovering addicts in the fellowship of 12-step is serenity. Serenity and serotonin. So, imagine my family with our brunch. Well, people who have the SLC6A4 genetic pattern for alcohol, they get a couple times that amount of serotonin experience with a couple of drinks. But then it diminishes, and over the next weeks, months, they are grossly deficient. So what do? They go back and drink more, and they justify it. And then they come up with slogans, and they gravitate towards groups of people who drink like them. Because then it's socially acceptable within their social network. So serotonin is incredibly important in all drugs of abuse. But it's very, very visual. So chemical dependency counselors out there, you don't have to confront denial. When you sit down with especially a client or patient who has relapsed, I encourage you, do not sit down and say, well, you're in denial. What how does that motivate one to change? I encourage you, get the DVD set, sit down, plug it in. In 10 to 15 minutes, you and your client in an individual session can watch me go through very simply and very clearly the brain biology of consumption of alcohol, and then you facilitate. And the way the DVD is structured, it helps elicit and engage the drug user. But you can facilitate that by saying, wow, do you feel that way? Is what Dr. Joe's talking about, does that make sense to you? Does that relate to you? And because it's the same human beings with slight variations of brain chemistry, they're going to say, yeah. Then you are supporting and empowering that client to accept that he or she cannot change brain chemistry, except temporarily by using, and that becomes a trap. that becomes very motivating. You don't have to confront, oh, you're in denial. Oh, I don't want to hear your excuses. That's a very negative experience for the client. What the client needs is positive empowerment. So not only does the DVD give you very clearly the brain chemistry, and actually technically biology, because we talk about these neurotransmitters, but I don't get into valences and positive and negative ionization, all that stuff. No. But when you share this with your clients and patients, psychiatrists and psychologists, mental health counselors out there, same thing. When you're working with someone who has a dependency, plug the DVD in, show them the 10-15 minute on their particular drug of choice, that you will have a bonding, a professionally bonding experience. That person's going to say, yeah, that's how I feel on the drug. And that's how I feel after the drug. And then the video goes right into, okay, given that, then let's take a look at what you and we all can do together, as a team, as a family, to support recovery. It gives specifics and some very, very true principles. So that's why the DVD is so important. And of course, it does also address the genetics. So, well, what other? Are there other genetic patterns for alcohol? Yeah. Heilig in 2009, the 118G gene variant, those people had a different dopamine response and more euphoria to alcohol. Does that not make sense, folks? If your genetic variation gives you more euphoria when you have the same amount of alcohol as other people, it's going to make you vulnerable. Johnson, 2011, patients having the LL gene variant of serotonin again, those people with the LL gene variant for serotonin, they reported lower numbers of drinks per day and more days abstinent when they were on the medication ondansetron, which is Zofran, than the people on placebo. Those with the AUTSA gene pattern, they drank an average of 5% less alcohol than people with a more common genetic pattern. Well, 5%, you know, for me as an addiction specialist, when I see people die who do not get recovery, 5% is disheartening. But the real importance here, folks, is the significance of the genetics. Wilhelmson in 2010 found that children inheriting the CYP, there's that pattern again, CYP2, but in this case it was the E1 gene, from their alcoholic parents were less able to hold their alcohol. Now, in that study, it wasn't known whether that contributed to addiction. Most of the studies show that those people who hold their alcohol better have a higher incidence of addiction. Weatherhill in 2012 found that people with a specific genetic pattern, they had more blackouts. Now, let's clarify that, because a lot of people misuse the term. If I drink so much that I pass into unconsciousness, that's passing out. If the next day I cannot remember part of what happened the day before, the night before when I was drinking, that is a blackout. And one way to understand that is simply that the brain was affected chemically in such a way, it doesn't remember where it stored the memory. It can't find it. And people are genetically vulnerable. Larson in 2010 found that those people with the DRD4, dopamine D4 gene, drank more in social settings. Wow, just incredible. Cannabis? That certainly can't be genetic. Now understand, folks, that every day in my practice, I see people with an attitude that since they smoked marijuana and most of their peer group smoked marijuana or cannabis in their adolescent, young adult years, that it can't be addictive. It's not addictive. No way. State of Washington, a vote of the citizens of the state of Washington voted this last year to legalize cannabis for recreational use. So it can't be addictive. No way. Sure it is. Absolutely. And it's actually a very difficult addiction to treat, in part because there's so much social sanction toward tolerance of use, towards using. but we work with people addicted to marijuana on a regular basis. They can't quit. Their spouse, partner, family are complaining about the use. It's impairing their memory. It robs people of their motivation. And it becomes debilitating. Well, can it be genetic? Oh, yeah. Yep. Kendler and Prescott found in 1998 that when the large group of people they studied, 60 to 80% of the cannabis dependence in female twins, these are female identical twins, so genetically almost completely identical, 60 to 80% of the cannabis dependence was explained by the genetic factors rather than other factors. So the reality is, folks, that many people, approximately 9% of people who use marijuana, will end up using it in a way in which it interferes with what they want for themselves in their life. So what they end up doing, like addicts, is they end up adjusting their own aspirations, their own expectations, to match their continued drug use. So 9% of the people in the United States who use marijuana will or cannabis will become dependent. And we know there are a number of genetic patterns that leave some people more vulnerable. Now remember my other metaphor for this. How did Harry Potter get his wand? Harry Potter, he went to the wand shop. How did he get his wand? Did Harry Potter choose the wand he wanted? No. The wand chooses the wizard. The wand chooses the wizard. We don't get to have a printout of our genetic makeup and how our genetic makeup dictates our brain chemistry. We therefore do not know neurochemically which drugs we are vulnerable to in addiction. Researchers know. That's the list I'm going through. Specific to drugs, specific genetic patterns. But especially when young kids in high school are experimenting with drug use, what they're really doing is auditioning for the drug that will addict them. Of course, not all of them. 9 to 12% of the population becomes addicted to a drug. So unfortunately, there's a social pattern of young kids in high school age, going and experimenting. What they're doing is auditioning for which drug their brain chemistry is going to latch on to. True et al. In 1999, he studied male twins and found that genetic factors were responsible for 44% of the cannabis dependence. What about methamphetamine? Well, I talked about this last week. This one is very, very salient. This one stands out. No one should use methamphetamine abusively. It's extremely dangerous. Causes massive, massive changes in the brain neurochemistry. But an incredible researcher named Harriet DeWitt, University of Chicago, she did studies on the 9-repeat genetic pattern. And one of the things she and her team found was that the people with the 9-repeat genetic pattern, their brain handled dopamine differently. And so what they found was that people using methamphetamine who had this genetic variation did not have the massive euphoria. Well, that's why people use methamphetamine. People don't use methamphetamine because they want to clean their house. They use methamphetamine because it gives them an incredible 8-hour euphoria. But what she and her researchers found was that people with the 9-repeat pattern, they did not have the euphoria. And most of them also had a confirmed or suspected history of ADD and ADHD. And what they found was that these people needed a more powerful amphetamine to overwhelm the ADD so they could function better. I spoke about a client of mine. She's doing very, very well. She's on a medication called Dazoxin that provides her better brain chemistry so she's calm, focused, and able to function. We're going to talk more genetics on the other side of the break. We'll see you in just a couple minutes. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry, and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15-minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning doctor Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. So we were talking about DeWitt's incredible research of 2005 and 6, in which she found that there were people using methamphetamine that had a different genetic pattern. And what we learned from that was that those people did not have the incredible euphoria, that mind-expanding beyond typical human experience of euphoria on methamphetamine. What we realized was that these people with a 9-repeat pattern, they function better on a stronger stimulant drug overcoming their ADD than other people with ADD and ADHD. I spoke about, I've got a client, I saw her not long ago, she's doing incredibly well. She's on the medication Dazoxin. It's very carefully prescribed, and she is calm and thoughtful with her spontaneous emotions. She's doing very, very well. Chemical dependency counselors, psychologists out there, psychiatrists, physicians, especially family docs, be aware that there are people out there with a 9-repeat genetic pattern, and especially chemical dependency counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, be aware that some people who are dangerously using methamphetamine may be trying to better manage their ADD, ADHD of the genetic, of the 9-repeat genetic pattern. So in working with them, if they take methamphetamine and they do not have the incredible euphoria, but they just function better, then I encourage you to read DeWitt's research, read the press releases by the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and educate yourself about the 9-repeat pattern, and then sort through drug selection that makes more sense. Again, I had a client who's on Dazoxin. She functions very, very well. Opioids. Well, we talked about opioid medication and genetics before earlier in the show, but just another piece here. Galertner is a researcher that found that a particular chromosomal pattern on chromosome number 11 and chromosome number 3. And those of you who are physicians or geneticists, it was on the long arm of chromosome number 3 that these people had a genetic pattern that influenced dependence. So be aware, we are not all created equal. When Harry Potter went to get his wand, the wand chose him. Genetics does affect our behavior. It does influence how drugs are metabolized in our body through the liver. It also affects how our brain responds to the drugs. Now I'm going to blow your minds. It's not just drug addiction, but gambling too. There was a study done a number of years ago that showed people with a particular genetic pattern had higher incidence of problem gambling. So yes, our genes affect our behavior. Again, let me give a non-drug example. My youngest son is adopted. And we're reminded every time we see him, every time we see his birth mother, which is usually 3-4 times a year, we see these behavioral nuances that are just a match, just dead match. And he's never lived with her. He sees her 3-4 times a year. These emotional responses, we believe, are genetic, which makes sense, doesn't it? Doesn't it make sense? I mean, let's think about it. When a child is born, when a baby is, an infant is born, how does that baby know to suckle on a nipple? He or she doesn't go to school. Those with disabilities need some extra support in learning how to suckle. It's genetic. Those behaviors are genetically programmed into the body. So it's no wonder that that different people have different genetic patterns, and those genetic patterns respond differently to various drugs. So why is this so important? Well, I've made a number of references to how I use this in addiction treatment and recovery. Yes, number one, it reduces the guilt. Not the guilt of the behavior, of all the damage that's come from the addiction, but we help the family and the drug user very effectively work that through. But one of the most powerful changes for drug users who are addicted in us clearly sharing the genetic component is it reduces his or her guilt of being an addict. It reduces his or her tripping over that I'm not really an addict, that I can fight through this. The wonderful gentleman and his wife I saw last night, he talked about how he just keeps trying to prove that he can handle it, that he has complete control. Of course, that's 30 years now of miserable, sad failure. So when we share with people the genetic vulnerabilities for specific drugs of addiction, it helps them shift. It helps them recognize. And this is thanks good to Spear and Rader, Wayne Rader, who I see periodically a couple times a year. He developed a systemic, he and Rader developed a systemic, family systemic intervention strategy. This is a legitimate intervention strategy. Many people have not heard about it. But essentially what it consists of is you sit down with the family, you develop a trusting relationship, and one of the things is you map out the family tree, and you highlight those people who have experienced addiction or depression, other behavioral problems. And by golly, what you see there in living color is a pattern that we know is genetic. But what that does is it helps the drug user understand he or she is not a perpetrator, though many, many harmful behaviors have been perpetrated. But what it does is it, for the whole family, puts into context the genetic vulnerability. And as I say, when I map this out for the family and the drug user, I say, wow, you were a sitting duck. You weren't going to dodge this one, were you? Look at the pattern. Look at the genetic pattern. It is not an excuse for the addiction. It becomes motivating. Sharing with drug users the brain neurobiology It's not an excuse. It becomes the motivation to change. That's why this is so important. Well, we're coming up on the end of another show. It was fantastic. I'm sorry we didn't have any callers. Please call in. We're going to have wonderful shows. Next week is Christmas, and I'm going to take the time off. But we're going to have Dr. Mel Pohl step in a encore presentation. So be sure you tune into that. And drjoeradio@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. We'll see you in the first week of January, because we also will have an encore presentation for New Year's Day. Have a great time, and let's get back and overcome addiction in the new year. Thank you very much.
Thank you again for listening to Overcoming Addiction. Please join Dr. Joe again next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a good week.